Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by Kane's Tire in San Rafael. Kane's Tire has always had the lowest prices in Marin for 54 years. Today's guest from AT&T Park in San Francisco, Giants left-hander Jeremy Affelt. Jeremy, there's supposed to be a home field advantage here at AT&T Park, and usually there is, but lately you guys have been in kind of a funk. Can you explain what's been going on here at home during this losing streak at home?
I don't know if you can really explain it. They score more runs than we do. You know, that's how you don't win. But I think home field advantage is, you know, I think it's a little bit of a, you know, it can be taken the wrong way. Obviously, it's a pitcher's park. It's not offensive. So there's never a lot of runs scored. Well, I can't say never, but I would say that when it comes to the home field advantage, I think it tends to be at times for the pitchers. And that's why there's low-scoring games, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to end up on the winning side of a low-scoring game. So, I think our guys are fine. I think we're playing really, really good ball. I mean, offensively, have we lulled a little bit? Yeah, but when you look at the kind of schedule we've had the last few days, I don't like to make a ton of excuses, but it hasn't been the easiest one on players to recover and play with energy, you know. So and that's probably more of the scheduling conflict that I think a lot of players are starting to talk about now, and the tragedy behind, I think, the brutal schedule that they're making teams play, and then the owners agreeing to certain times, I would say, is needs to be looked at.
Well, yeah, especially for a West Coast team. I mean, you guys are playing a night game in New York. It ends late. You know, by the time you get home, it's the wee hours of the morning at best, and you're playing a game the next day. How unfair is it to West Coast teams? Because, you know, for the East Coast team, it might be a little different, and I think most of the time the schedule is allowing that, let's say, the last game of the series on a Thursday would be a day game no matter where you are.
Yeah, I think it's most of the time. I think that when you have to play a night game and travel all the way back West Coast, some people say, well, you're gaining 3 hours. Yeah, but that doesn't mean there's not extra innings, there's not rain delays, there's not like what we had in LA or in New York, where we had an airport close on us because they said we passed curfew, so we had to go to a different airport. So if you're going to put a night game with a city that has a curfew on it, I'm saying that there's an issue with that. When you get back at, you know, 5 in the morning, but by the time you get back to the field, into your bed, the sun's come up, and then you're expected to play at 7:05 and then have a 4:15 and then have a 1:05. I'm saying that there's sometimes you come out of it okay, but sometimes you don't, and I think there's going to be a good reason why if you don't. So, I think that needs to be addressed. We're not robots, and if you're going to treat us like robots, I think we need to look at the scenario. But, you know, I think with us, I think we're fine. I think we're going to recover just fine, and hopefully we'll get out of the funk a little bit. But I think our offense has been one of the best offenses the Giants organization has seen in a long time. So, you know, with that, I think we have a lot of confidence in what we're doing out there.
That starts at the top of the lineup, too. I mean, the great thing has been Aoki. What an acquisition he's been. He's getting on base all over the place, and Joe Panik is really proving that he is consistent. Now, how much have you enjoyed watching those guys at the top of the order?
I think it's been great. You know, the 1-2 punch, those guys are getting on for guys like Pagan and Buster and Belt and Pence. You know, I think that the RBI potentials are obviously there. And it's been fun to watch. I think everybody, you know, anytime you have a team where you can start out potentially the game with two knocks, or you can have a guy on base every other inning right out the gate, I think that that's always a positive thing. And I think offensively, I think that we're right where we need to be. I'm thoroughly enjoying watching our offense. I'm enjoying watching our whole team play, to be honest with you, but offensively, I think it's been great.
We'll continue the conversation with Jeremy Affelt of the Giants right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark McElhone at Kane's Tire in San Rafael. If you want the lowest prices in Marin and the best service, call us at 453-2942. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street, where our prices beat Costco's prices every time.
What about Chris Heston and the no-hitter? We haven't talked since then. And, you know, there have been no-hitters since you've been here. You've seen a Matt Cain perfect game, Tim Lincecum, a couple of no-hitters. Where did this stand as far as just seeing a rookie go out there and throw a no-hitter and the enjoyment level of that?
Yeah, I think they all stand out. Obviously, Cain's was, you know, statistically the most dominant perfect game in the history, but Heston, you know, other than those three hit batters, honestly, it was a pretty, I mean, it was pretty dominant. I mean, there wasn't a lot of hard hit balls there. There wasn't a lot of, you know, usually when you have that no hitter, there's always the one or two or three balls that have been hit on the screws, and there got to be a layout, unbelievable play, and he really didn't have any dangerous balls that were taken away could have been hits if he came out. So it's pretty awesome to watch. And then that's a fifth no hitter, and honestly, except for the last hitter of a ball game, Petit almost threw a perfect game as well. So a couple years ago, so we've seen some pretty awesome pitching performances in this organization here the last 7 years that I've been here. So I there's no doubt in my mind that you know, we have the best pitching coaches in the game. But you know, I think that for me, there's going to be a situation. You know, there's no doubt when my career is over and I look back, and I'm going to be very, very thankful that I got to say that I was a part of this generation of baseball for the Giants. It's been pretty inspiring and definitely full of memories.
It's great that you mentioned the pitching coaches. Dave Rigetti, he threw a no-hitter on the 4th of July back in the 80s. And Mark Gardner almost had one. He had one broken up in the 10th inning, which is pretty amazing. But when you get to that situation, can you only imagine with what's going through his mind in the 9th inning? I guess you can relate. I mean, you've pitched in the World Series where it's a clutch situation. You don't want to mess it up. It's kind of like a bowler who has 10 strikes in a row, he's trying to get the final strikes there in the last frame. You don't want to get too nervous about it.
Yeah, that's really hard to do. This game's really mental. And so to be able to go out there in the 9th inning, because reality is in the 9th inning what's going on. And I think to go out there and to be able to stay calm enough to make your pitches and execute pitches. I mean, he struck out the side. I mean, it's not like he just got outs. I mean, he went out there and executed some pretty good pitches. So to be able to do that very, very in a calm manner, it is not by any means easy. And I feel like to be able to throw that no-hitter, that's, to me, the toughest things about a no-hitter is those last three outs, not, trying too hard or trying to do anything different or anticipating. And you see a lot of no-hitters broken up in the 9th inning, and I think it's because they leave a ball over that can be hit because it's tight. It's tough. The team that you're throwing a no-hitter against is the one I'm a no-hitter throwing against them. So the bats get pretty impressive, and so to see how he did it, in the dominant way that he did it in the ninth there, was pretty awesome.
Something else that I didn't get a chance to talk to you about, but in Boston recently, a fan got hurt. A bat came flying in the stands, part of a bat, and fortunately she's going to be okay. But you wonder about that, and do you think there's enough safety around baseball for fans? I mean, balls are flying in there, now bats are flying into the stands.
Yeah, no, probably not. I would say that when it comes to a ball, you can't. I mean, for me, if you look at how the baseball fields are designed nowadays with fans being so close, and Boston is a historical ballpark, but the fans are actually pretty close. To have nets probably all the way to the end of the dugout is probably pretty important. It's not going to affect the viewing of the seats. I mean, people sit behind the nets all the time, and you can't tell that they're there. They're pretty fine nets to look through. But when a ball goes past the dugout, it's probably losing speed fast enough to where a person can get out of the way. And when you're that close, like the dugout or closer to a field, the first probably natural reaction for a person when they see something coming at them is to freeze. Well, by the time they decide to unfreeze and move, the way stuff flies at guys, at people in baseball fields, that you're too late. And you see all the time with hitters. You throw a ball, too far in on a hitter, and he stops, and then before he gets out of the way, he's going to get hit. I mean, that's just all there's to it. So, most fans are not ready for it, so when they do see something, they lock up, and then you have situations like that where bats, even now bats, are breaking and shattering and flying at people, and there's just no way they can get out of the way in time. So I probably think they should think about probably putting some nets a little further down, at least to protect the people above the dugouts even.
More with Jeremy Affelt after this. Inside China Basin is sponsored by Angel Borelli, a nationally known expert on pitching mechanics from right here in the Bay Area. She works with some of the best pitchers in the Bay Area, troubleshooting and solving their performance issues. Listen to Angel Borelli's weekly podcast, The Fix, which discusses issues and solutions for pitchers from a sports science perspective. And get a weekly tip on pitching at Angel Borelli Pitching on Facebook. Check out our website, jimscience.com, where you can order her books and other publications. Contact Angel Borelli today. And Angel will join us after the conversation with Jeremy Affelt. We'll have a pitching mechanics tip. What about being a pitcher and being in position to protect yourself on a line drive? I mean, it appears that when you finish a pitch, you're in really good fielding position and, you know, protecting yourself as well. But is that something that you can teach? I mean, you know, your delivery, the way it ends, how do you get in that good position?
I think you try to teach athletic position, but some guys, that's just not their way of pitching, and they spin off and how they finish or how violent they finish or, you know, different things. So, you know, for me, you can try to teach early, but once you get here, I'm saying your delivery is your delivery. And I'm thankful I try to finish right at a guy, and I've been able to get out of. And there's some balls that have gone by my head that I felt go by me, and I usually react pretty good and can, like, stop a ball if it's at me. But the balls that have gone by my head a few times, man, I'll tell you, if I didn't have that kind of a turn, I'd probably have been hit a few times. So especially now with bats and stuff, too, coming at us. But I do think it's important to finish in an athletic position, but some guys, it's just not their delivery. You can't really help that.
Before I let you go, I know you had a nice event with your teammates for Not For Sale, which is your charity that you're dealing with. Tell us, you know, how much satisfaction do you get out of that when you involve some of your teammates, your friends that can come out? You guys were at the 21st Amendment, I heard, and it was a pretty good time.
Yeah, this one was for Generation Alive. Not For Sale, I'm an ambassador for, and I do some things with. I really enjoy them. Part of why I started Generation Alive was because of the influence of Not For Sale. But this, I do stuff with youth culture, so I do a lot of stuff with young people and trying to teach leadership and getting them to understand the pains that poverty causes and how important it is to be a servant leader to your community and your world in general. So this one wasn't for Not For Sale. This was for Generation Alive, but we had a great turnout. My teammates came out. We had a fun time. The fans came out. The sponsors came out. We had a really, really good time. We raised some really, really good money. We matched our fundraiser goal, and we set it pretty high. There was a significant amount of money that we set to try to raise, and we matched it. We were able to do it. So very, very excited. Very probably humbled for the fact that the amount of people from the community, whether it be corporations or fans, all came out to support this. Just shows you how important San Fran is as a community and as people that understand what's going on in the world, and they're wanting to help. And that was a really cool thing for me to see. My teammates having hearts to do this, and then my organization, just the staff that I have, all have important and beautiful hearts. So to be able to share that with the community that we've shared it with, I'm more than thankful.
That's really cool. Jeremy, thanks a lot for your time again. Good luck the rest of the homestand.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
That's Jeremy Affeldt, a conversation that I had with the Giants lefty on Monday. And here we are on Wednesday, and Angel Borelli joins us for our conversation that we have every other week about pitching mechanics. And what a matchup in Seattle tonight, Angel, with Madison Bumgarner going for the Giants. And we all know about him and his delivery. What about Felix Hernandez, who's going for the Seattle Mariners? And he's coming off a terrible outing. A lot of people are saying watch out because he just had a bad outing. Now he's going to be all keyed up to face the Giants, where I think he gave up 8 runs in a third of an inning his last outing. That rarely happens to King Felix. But what can you tell us about his delivery?
Well, before I answer that, do you know, have any idea with the velocity of his fastball on his last outing?
You know, I don't know. I don't think it's up there where it used to be anymore.
Yeah.
But it seemed like, I guess he just didn't have his stuff. Everything was not working for him.
Yeah, well, he's a great example of something that's so important. And so, first of all, when I'm around all my pitchers and we're talking about other pitchers, when you bring up his name, the pitchers love him. They absolutely think the highest of him. He's a very highly respected pitcher. And among younger pitchers, they think he's great. And what's interesting about him is he displays one of the characteristics that pitchers need to have. I mean, when I look at his mechanics, and his mechanics over the years, I've seen film. Of course, I always do research before I talk about a pitcher. He's had two different styles, but one thing he's kind of always done is he gets his arm to the right place at the right time. And that's a really good thing about him. And the thing that he really does well, that it looks like from what I can see, and it's because of a flaw in his mechanics, actually, but he is very deceptive with his delivery. So he hides the ball really well. And, you know, the hitters are picking up the ball, right? They're picking up the ball as soon as they can. And the better they are, the sooner they can pick it up. And his ball seems to come out of nowhere because he makes actually some flaws in his mechanics. And the flaws in his mechanics would actually explain why he is a great pitcher, could reach a ceiling in his velocity and then start dropping. He crosses over his body. So some of the things he does that we don't want young pitchers to emulate. The worst thing you can do is look at a major league pitcher and say, I want to do that. He tilts his arms. He steps with his left leg too far over, so he crosses over his body. He can't get his hips clear. But what all that does with that beautiful arm that he has that gets into the right place at the right time that we know needs to happen for a pitcher to be effective is he comes kind of spinning out of that awkward position and boom, the ball's out of his glove. And my guess is that the biggest thing about him is his deceptiveness. And the interesting thing is that in graduate school, I remember studying this. There are three things a pitcher needs to be successful. Mm-hmm. And there are three characteristics that we need to look for. And in order of events, from most important to least important, deception is the number one characteristic that we want to have pitchers have. And location and velocity is last. So what's interesting is he's got that deceptiveness, which has made him great. His mechanics, to me, would look like the kind of mechanics where he could have trouble with velocity. He also could have some trouble because of his crossing over with control. So now you're telling me that he's lost velocity over the years, and also he is now having some control problems. That's why we don't want to see somebody emulate incorrect footwork, et cetera. But he does deceive, and I think that's where his greatest asset is. And he also has an amazing way that, but even though going through a lot of gyrations, his back arm, his pitching arm, gets to the right place when his front foot touches down. And that is one of the critical features of a really good pitcher. So, so the hitters have to have their eyes open tonight.
What about his mental state? Because I mentioned, and this is a perennial Cy Young Award candidate. He knows how to pitch after a bad outing, you would think. But people talking about him being angry after that last outing, I don't know. Does that, in your experience, help pitchers? Or do they have to block out what happened the last outing? How do you focus on the task at hand when you know that you really pitched, one of your worst? For him, that was his worst outing that he's ever had.
Yeah, inexperienced pitchers will probably have reactions, and they're going to have to work on shaking it off. And, of course, their coaches are going to be reminding them to do that. But I believe that experienced pitchers know the danger, the absolute danger of thinking about the last outing. Yes, there is work that needs to be done. They need to do. And I tell every pitcher this, whether the outing's good or bad, look at your outing. Look at how it felt. How did you feel going into it? Did you warm up properly? Especially when someone has a bad outing. Don't be afraid to analyze it, but learn how to analyze it from an objective, non-emotional place. So let's say he says, geez, you know what? I was rushed in my warm-up bullpen for some reason, or, my timing felt off, so I should have stayed in the warm-up pen longer. It's very important to look at details, but not make up anything. And part of it is just baseball. We are not machines. That's why baseball is so cool. That's why a major league team that's the worst in history can beat the number one team. It's we're humans. So you look at it analytically. You consider what may have gone wrong. You mostly look at, did I know before I started that I was having a bad day? And most pitchers do. And then let it go and make sure that if you did pinpoint something, you don't make the same error. But experienced pitchers know the most deadly thing they can do is bring their history and their past event to the current moment. That would be shooting himself in the foot two times in a row. And I think that he probably knows how to handle that.
All right, Angel, we look forward to hearing you on the Fix podcast, which is also featured here on thesportsvirus.com. That's Angel Borelli, and I want to thank her and Jeremy Affeld for joining us on the podcast today. Coming up on Friday, Jarrett Parker, rookie outfielder with the Giants. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.